This is Business Impact, a podcast series from UCD College of Business, Ireland's leading business school. I'm your host, Emmett Oliver, and each episode I'll be joined by world-renowned faculty from across the College of Business, as well as international industry leaders who'll offer us insight, spark curiosity, and challenge you to rethink how you do business in a changing world. Welcome back to another edition of Business Impact, UCD Business School podcast. It's great to have you as we swelter a time of recording, I stress, because it'll probably have completely changed by the time we publish this particular conversation. But at the moment, we are sweltering and we love every moment of it. It's great to see it arriving on our shores, even if it just lasts a few afternoons. Now, we have been talking about a lot of subjects over the last few months, a lot of them very sort of geopolitical and so on. But one of the things we haven't touched on really has been the health of Irish business, Irish brands. Where are they at? We know we're living in a cost of living crisis. We know there's a lot of other challenges with tariffs and everything. But we need to also drill down, I think, and a conversation that needs to happen is about what is the health of Irish brands? And we do lots of great things in this country. We do airlines well. See Ryanair. We do, of course, Stoush. We all know who's behind that particular area. And of course, we do great food, which we've done over the years. But we haven't quite cracked, at least my perception is, luxury, premium brands. We just haven't quite got there when you look at the powerhouses that are France, Italy, and many other countries littered across Europe. And of course, the United States as well, a big player in this area too. So why is that? And can we do anything about it? Well, my guest today is going to be able to help me to answer a lot of those questions. Her name is Ashley MacDonald, and she has been in this whole area of luxury and premium goods for a good few years, which she's going to tell me a little bit about more now. She's also the CEO of Vico, which is a new company on the block over the last few months that's looking to bring together a load of Irish luxury brands and premium brands and put them into a scaled up structure. And we're going to hear a lot more about those plans as well. She's also, of course, a UCD graduate, and she joins me now. Ashley MacDonald, thank you for coming to talk to us.
Hi, Emma. Thank you so much for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure, and I'm looking forward to speaking to you about all things Irish brands and what I think is going to happen over the next couple of years.
Yes. Now, listen, we'll get into the future. Let's go back briefly to the past, I suppose. As I said in my introduction, you are a UCD graduate, so we always like to hear those stories about how your years in college were, what you learned from that period, and have you taken any of that stuff from that period of your life into your current business plans and ambitions?
I am indeed. So I did my master's at UCD Michael Smurfit, but I was on the UCD campus as well because I also studied Italian. I did a program called SEMS. It's the Master's in Management, and it's actually a double master's. So funnily enough, I started it. So the first half for me was in France at HUC Paris, and the second half was on campus in BlackRock. But it was a really, really important program for me to be a part of because in France, it's actually partnered with HEC and LVMH Group. LVMH Group being the biggest luxury group in the world and one of the biggest companies in the world in terms of market capitalization. It's always sitting at number one or two in Europe and often one or two globally as well. So my very first week on campus at HEC, I met the HR from Christian Dior, who ultimately hired me. A year later, after I had finished my studies on campus in BlackRock. So it was really, really important. And I definitely wouldn't have been able to move as quickly as I did within the industry if I hadn't embarked on that master's program. That is for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. You had the interest even then. Is the interest in luxury goods, is it in the goods? Is it in the business models? Is it in the global nature of it? What is it that sort of brought you into this area and that's kept you going into it for the last few years? What is the thing that really kind of makes your blood flow?
So it's been just over 10 years now, 13 years since I moved to Paris, where I'm still based. And the thing that got me was fashion. Fashion is the industry that makes people dream. It's the glamour. It's everything that you kind of expect from the luxury industry. Usually that's coming from fashion. The reality is, though, it's often not fashion that's actually driving the revenue and definitely not driving the profitability. It's usually coming from beauty. It's coming from alcohol. It's coming from watches and jewelry. But fashion's always the pinnacle. It's Fashion Week and it's the shoots, it's the covers of Vogue and all that. So like many people working in the industry, definitely it was fashion that brought me in. But then I quickly realized there's a lot more to the industry and there's really, really interesting ways to have a fabulous career and also lifestyle while working within luxury. And I've been lucky enough to be doing that now for the last 10 years.
Now, two things that occur to me about luxury goods is, one, we mainly see them at airports. And maybe that's just me, but I think it could be for a lot of listeners. And secondly, they tend to be high margin products, right? And that's what attracts business and investment into those things. Can you talk to me about those two issues? Why is it we only touch upon them sometimes? And are they still that high margin product category they've always been?
Absolutely. So in terms of distribution, that is a key component of the definition of a luxury product. People keep asking me, what kind of brands are you interested in to acquire within Vicco Group? First thing I say is it needs to be a link to Ireland. And the second thing I say is, can I imagine that brand being sold in duty-free, so in an airport, because it's such an important part of distribution for luxury. The third question I ask is, would the brand be, you know, suitable to be sold in Brown Thomas or Selfridges or an international equivalent? And the last question I always ask is, if I receive something from that brand, would I perceive it as a gift? So if I'm getting 3 out of 4 yeses, then that's the type of brand that we're able to acquire and really transform and scale within the luxury industry. Because luxury, it's not just about price point. It's not just about the branding. It's not just about the, you know, origins of, or the production. It's really actually something quite emotional. So when we look at potential acquisitions, we don't lead with a question about their P&L or their EBITDA. We actually lead with those more emotional questions that link to distribution, because that will actually define the perception of a brand. And when it comes to luxury goods, a lot of it comes down to, can I make this something that's desirable? And can I make it something after that that's commercially viable? So it's the desirability comes before the commercial viability.
Yeah, we'll come on to the Vicco part of the story in a second. But do you think, just in terms of kind of positioning of this whole Irish premium good, luxury good idea, do you think we need a bit of a makeover? Ireland is associated with lots of things, lots of green things. We obviously were an agricultural economy, you know, relatively recently, only in recent decades have we kind of shed that skin. So is there, like, do you have to kind of almost sort of change perception here, never mind the economics of it all, change the perception of Ireland as a country and associate us with luxury goods? It's a very ambitious idea. So lots of people would find that daunting, but you seem to be sailing right into it.
Yeah, well, I think because I've lived half my life outside of Ireland now, so I understand the international perception of Ireland, especially when it comes to luxury consumers. And the perception is very positive. Ireland is seen as a beautiful country. It's very green. It's really seen as a leader. It's seen as a wealthy country. It's also seen as a country that produces incredible golf courses, amazing hospitality, Ayr Manor, Dromoland, Ashford, you know, also the likes of Kerrygold and brands that are under Bord Bia. So Ireland and Team Ireland or Ireland Inc. or even Tourism Ireland, Fáilte Ireland, all of the above, they've done a really, really, really good job with the perception of Ireland on an international stage. We're definitely our harshest critics at home. And the piece that's been missing, though, and it's the constant feedback that I've been getting on this journey over the last couple of years, is that when your international travellers that have high disposable income are in Ireland, they can't really find Irish luxury goods to purchase. So last year, over €1 billion was spent on personal luxury goods in Ireland. But a very, very small portion of that would have gone to Irish brands because they're not showing up the way that they should and they're not showing up where they should. It's really hard to find Irish premium brands on the high street, and it's even harder to find them in the airport, which is the two places that, especially as an international luxury shopper, you're going to be looking for them. Brown Thomas, you will struggle to find an Irish brand. I go on a probably monthly basis now when I'm in Dublin, and my whole team do it as well. They go in, the last staff, where are the Irish brands? Most of the time they can't even answer. It's a huge, I think, missed opportunity. But again, it's not just about showing up in the right place, but the brands need to be able to communicate to retailers the way that they expect to be communicated with, the right product, the right promotion strategy, the right trade marketing plans. And all the international brands know how to do it. That's their bread and butter. So even at home, the Irish brands, they're not getting that visibility in the right distribution places because they're just lacking the experience and the education around it. There's no lack of beautiful brands, but being able to present themselves in the right way, getting into the right rooms, that's something with Vicco that we'll be able to help them with.
Now, do you sense that, like, you're building on any kind of foundations? I'm kind of thinking of, you know, there was obviously Waterford Crystal, and there has been other Irish glassware companies. You know, there's some clothing brands that are out there. They tend to be sort of niche, though, a little bit. Is there, like, do you see yourself sort of starting from sort of year zero here, or do you see yourself, no, there are some already out there that, I mean, they're a long time, we just need to amplify them up a bit more, or what's your sort of starting point as you perceive it?
So to be honest, the starting point was building Ireland Fashion Week. So I own the National Fashion Week in Ireland that launched last year. We had 54 Irish fashion designers participate. We had over a reach of over half a billion, so over 500 million impressions throughout the week. And we were able to incubate those brands. We were able to actually help them grow throughout the year. So we have boot camps and talks and seminars, everything from their intellectual property and trademarking to their communications plan, their social media strategy. We had 1.4 million euro of support for those designers to produce incredible world-class fashion shows throughout the week, all over the country, from Ballymahinch Castle in Connemara to City Hall in Dublin. And that was incredible because we were able to give a really strong platform to designers. We're able to discover amazing talent, and we were able to bring international press and media over to the country as well so that they could see the talent that we have. So Ireland Fashion Week, it's its own entity. And to be honest, it started really as a passion project because I knew that there was a need for something like that. But it's grown now into its own profitable business, and it's doing really well, so that we're able to now this year expand and take on 90 designers. So that will keep growing, and it's going to, you know, continue to be that platform that nurtures brands in Ireland, not just fashion, because we've got jewellery, we've got handbags, accessories. We had chocolate brands present. We had amazing Irish niche wines and spirits brands. We had retailers participate. And it's a great cultural platform as well, because it's not just about fashion. You know, it's about music, entertainment. It's about heritage textiles, and it's about venues around the country that you couldn't just walk into on any given day. So even more special to attend a fashion show there.
Now, there's this new company, Vico. It's not a household name. And the strange thing about it is you're telling me, and it's kind of an amusing in one sense, that it doesn't have any aspirations in some senses to be a household name, because it's a different thing completely. But just tell our listeners a bit, what is Vico and why is it likely or possibly going to be the vehicle that can pull some of these brands together?
Yeah, so Vico is Ireland's first luxury group. We're set to raise 50 million euro this year for our first acquisitions. We've got LOIs, so LOIs submitted for the first two brands. So basically, we're in the late stages now.
Just explain LOIs for people who mightn't know.
Yeah, so it's your letter of intent, and that gets released once we have received all the financial data from a potential acquisition. And we have come to an agreement on terms and what that would look like for us to actually acquire the brand, whether that's a 100% acquisition or a minimum of 35%. And in Ireland, I keep getting the feedback, this is really ambitious. This is very innovative. I'm not bringing anything new here. I'm just bringing what I learned over the last 10 years.
You get nervous when Irish people say to you, that's very ambitious.
No, I love to hear it. But I'm like, guys, this, you haven't heard anything yet. The real ambitious plans, they're the infrastructural, you know, plans. We're working on localizing international magazines and media platforms for Ireland. So right now it's really just that first step of just acquiring the brands and rolling them up into a group. So it's not private equity and it's not venture capital. It's a conglomerate in technical terms. And what we're doing now over the next couple of months is securing those first couple of acquisitions. They'll all roll up into the group, some at 100%. We've got one that we're looking at an 80% acquisition, and one a smaller stake because the main shareholders absolutely want to come along on this journey. And what we'll do from the first moment that they join the group then is basically an audit. We look at how they operate, what they do, what can we have, you know, where are the quick fixes, what can we change? And then it's looking at our capital injection. So, okay, let's take this brand. It's a fashion brand. Today, they only do ready-to-wear. We know that if a fashion brand actually wants to compete on a global stage and be profitable, it needs to have two things. It needs to have accessories. So that can be shoes, it can be bags, it can be sunglasses, belts, you name it. That's actually where the money is. And ideally, it should also have a fragrance. So actually working with that brand then to develop out a fragrance offering, whether it's a, you know, a men's or a woman's fragrance, or it could even be fragrance for home, for example. So candles and diffusers. So we take a brand, we look at how do we actually turn that into a scalable one. And once we have that product portfolio expansion that's ready to go, we then look at what are the target markets? Do we go straight to the US? Is this a brand maybe that has more appeal in the Middle East? Is it something that would be in demand in Asia? And when we pick our market, and then we expand the brand. So there's two ways of growing. It's growing your product portfolio, and then it's growing your international footprint as well.
Now, what kind of companies are you hoping to take a stake in? Do they have to be profitable? Do they have to be there for a long number of years with a track record? Are they more startup territory? What would your preference be?
Our preference would be brands that have a unique identity. So they really stand out. They've got a clear character to them. We'd love brands, of course, that are profitable and that are on track for growth as well. But the reality is we're coming into a place now in Ireland where there are family businesses that are in their second generation. So the people running them today, it was founded by their parents, and they don't have anyone to take over after them. So the grandchildren of the founders are not interested. So this is a big pinch point for family businesses going from the second to the third generation. And, you know, sometimes they're small family businesses. They might be doing, you know, 1 to 5 million euro revenue a year, but with great potential if they had the capital to actually go and expand internationally or expand their product portfolio. And a lot of the time, those kind of companies, they'll sell off their assets. Maybe they had a building or an office or, you know, production site, and the brand itself won't continue. So we have a lot of brands like that coming to us. Most of the time, they have financial institutions that are working with them to help them prepare for a sale. And that's been amazing for us because we see a huge pipeline of these types of, you know, wonderful heritage brands that have identity. They definitely have profitability, but they've also got great potential. And when you roll them up into a group and you have all of the you know, shared back office, whether it's your marketing or your salespeople that are going to be knocking on the door of your retailers and your airport saying, we've got five brands in a portfolio to bring you. What can you do for us? That's where things start to really change in terms of the scale.
I suppose you need to be careful as well, because you're trying to pick winners here, presumably long term. So you don't want to pick too many losers. I mean that financially, of course. So I suppose, is there a certain filter you're going to use, or what kind of risk level are you going to have to make sure that, you know, 5 years from now, Vicco is saddled with a lot of good companies, but not companies that are a drain?
At the end of the day, we are only looking at companies that are profitable at the beginning. We're only looking at companies that would be seen as a safe bet. And the risk on our side is how much growth potential is there for that brand. Because automatically, when you roll it up and you have that group structure, you're going to have a huge amount of synergies. So we're not acquiring a brand and then hiring an entire new team to manage that brand. It's quite the opposite. They'll roll up into the group and then they'll plug into our back office and have all the resources then that they're able to make the most of. Later on down the line, absolutely, we'll be looking at brands that maybe have distressed debt, brands where maybe it's only the IP that you're able to acquire, or brands that maybe are going through difficulties. So the reality is, we'll be acquiring the stock that they have left over. So we'll be able to take risks like that later on down the line. But at the beginning, we're looking at ones that are stable. They're able to, you know, join the group and have those quick wins in terms of efficiencies. But then the real return is when we skyrocket those brands and we, you know, 10x them, 100x them in terms of their sales.
Right. And in terms of it, like, you know, the reaction you're getting from the Irish luxury, first of all, like, is there many luxury brands out there in number terms? Or do you kind of already know a lot of these people and companies and it's kind of a case of coming back to them for a fresh conversation? Or is it, are you discovering companies that almost you've never even heard of? Like, so I'm just trying to get an idea of the ecosystem that's out there.
Yeah, so we look at quite a diverse ecosystem. So we're interested in fashion, we're interested in beauty, we're interested in wines and spirits. So it'll be mainly spirits, although there are some amazing wine brands owned by Irish families. We're also interested in watches and jewellery, and then we're interested in selective retail. So they're actually the same core pillars of most of the other luxury groups in the world, LVMH being the biggest one, which is where I started my career. And when we're looking at the potential brands within each of those types of portfolios, we have our target brands. But for now, we actually haven't had to reach out to any brands. We've had about 500 brands come to us, especially over the last month since we announced the group. But even before that, we were on the ground. We were, you know, speaking with the banks. We were making it known we're in market to buy brands. And it's been really refreshing because I've discovered so many brands that are, you know, 50 to 70 years old, and they do really well. I'm not their target customer, but they are the type of brand that would fit really well into our portfolio. And a lot of them, again, because they're more those legacy brands or heritage traditional brands, they're completely lacking an IT infrastructure. They don't have a digital marketing strategy. A lot of the things that are native to myself and the team members and our amazing advisory board and our, you know, our partners in back office, that's the kind of stuff that's, they're the quick wins for us that a lot of these brands today aren't actually even attempting to implement.
Now, you've worked, as you said yourself, you've worked around the luxury goods industry for a good few years. Like, what is it that can make a luxury brand grow? Like, obviously there's, you know, the marketing side, there's the brand work, there's obviously the business model, there's the pricing, there's the international strategy, there's the quality of the good, which is, you know, big demand, and people in this area really, really get into the detail of the product. So is it all of the above, or is there certain things that you'd say if you're advising these companies, this is where you really need to pay attention? This is the difference between success and failure for a luxury brand, because I don't know this sector as well as you would do. So just for our listeners' benefit, can you kind of outline what you think are the key kind of touch points for success in luxury goods?
Yeah, absolutely. So the last 10 years, I basically did 5 years focused on LVMH Group. And then I did 5 years at a group called Pooch. So I left there 7 months ago to be able to now launch Vicco. That's why I've only been able to speak about it for the last couple of weeks, because I had to wait 6 months. And there's two main things, really. It's the desirability. If you're a luxury brand and you're selling luxury goods, people don't actually need your product. So you need to be desirable. And that's something that comes from your brand storytelling. It comes from your brand moving at the speed of culture. It comes from you actually creating emotional experiences around your brand that are not focused necessarily on the product, but the whole universe of the brand, whether that's the ads and communications, whether it's your experience in store, the type of people you associate yourself with as a brand. So your desirability element is so important. And we're actually really bad at doing that in Ireland for, you know, fashion brands, even beauty brands. It's something that we can make massive improvements on. And then the second one is that commercial viability. So in general, what I've seen across the board with fashion brands in particular in Ireland, you have these incredible creative designers, but they've never learned anything about running a business. They don't know how to actually run a website. They can't really even figure out how to sell their products or how to price them a lot of the time. So maybe they're doing well on the desirability side of things, but if the commercial viability element isn't there, you're really going to struggle. So it's finding that balance between the two. And in general, most successful luxury brands in the world, they do roll up into a group because it just gives you that opportunity as a creative-led brand to be able to tap into all the boring back office stuff that I'm good at doing, because sadly I don't have the creative talents to be able to actually create a brand. But what I do know how to do is to run them as a business and to make sure that you connect all the right people so that you're presenting the brand in the most desirable way possible. So that's what the consumer sees. But behind the scenes, you're making sure that commercial viability is always at the forefront.
And for Ireland to be successful, I mean, I suppose we have to play in certain sectors, right? We can't be presumably good at everything, because I'm not sure if such a country exists. So is it better like the Swiss have done with watches, or the French have done with wines and champagnes, or the Italians have done with clothing? Is it better in long term, even your own company, do you see yourselves sort of settling in a particular area? I know you're casting your net wide at the start, but do you see Ireland playing in one particular area in time, or do you see it more scattergun initially and see what happens? Because I suppose there's two ways to go, isn't there? There's two directions you can go.
We're going to lean into what Ireland is good at. So right now, Ireland is known more or less globally for its knitwear, right? For sheep. You know, it's really simplifying it. But the reality is, like, none of the knitwear manufacturers in Ireland use Irish wool. So that's another project that we're working on. But it's looking at how do we change that? How can we make Irish wool a wool that can actually be transformed and used? Because we should be able to make things out of 100% Irish wool. It's just not the case today. But knitwear, we are really well known globally for knitwear. So again, it's if we are an Irish fashion brand, make sure we've got really strong knitwear within our collections, because that's what people are going to actually want. Like you mentioned, the Italians being good at fashion, they are, but what the Italians are actually really well known for is their leather goods. So it's really important for all the Italian fashion houses to be really strong on leather, whether it's shoes or bags or belts. Like Gucci, if they got rid of all of their leather goods, well, the brand itself never would have been created. So fashion overall builds the dream and the perception of the brand, but it's the specific things that they're very good at that will drive the majority of the sales. Also in Ireland, we're really well known, of course, for our alcohol brands. I think we've got a really good opportunity there when it comes to niche spirits brands in particular. And then lastly, like you said, the Swiss, they're really well known for their watches. They're also really well known for their chocolate. And I think Ireland has a really nice opportunity to enter into the luxury chocolate space as well, because we've got some great chocolatiers in the country. And for now, they're only sold locally, but there's a great opportunity to tap into your international buyers and customers who are in Ireland. And then again, to expand internationally the way that the Swiss and the Belgians have as well.
Now, I know a lot of entrepreneurs, I know a lot of business owners, and they're different personality types, but they tend to be quite headstrong. A lot of them believe in a certain sense of mission themselves, and it's their company, and they've got, as you said yourself, heritage stories and backstories and so on. So will it be hard for you to convince them to maybe not let go entirely, but let go at least partially and enter a whole new arrangement? Is there certain companies of these 500 that you've seen sight of who will just say, look, good luck to Vico, good luck to you, Ashley, but we're doing our own thing. We're happy enough with what we're doing. We've got our own strategy. Thank you very much. And I suppose that's okay. But how many of them do you think are going to be in that category?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if brands have an international mindset and if they have international competitor brands of theirs on their radar, then they'll be fully aware of how these infrastructures work, and they'll likely be looking to join a luxury group. And that was one of the reasons why I said Vico needs to exist, because I've had so many brands come to me over the years asking, Irish brands asking me, can you please introduce us to the M&A team at LVMH, or introduce us to the M&A team at Pooch? And in general, if I was able to see the financial data, I was able to see two things. The brands in general were far too small to get anywhere near the M&A team from LVMH or Puig, because LVMH, you know, they're looking at brands that are doing $1 billion in revenue a year in general. And Puig, maybe you might get away with the 250 million, but it would be closer to the 500 million annual revenue. And no Irish brands are doing that today in the luxury space. So what we're solving for, it's not really the capital that we're solving for, because brands could go to banks and take out loans, or they could get private investors if they wanted. But what we're solving for is that whole piece of how to actually operate a luxury brand. We don't have that knowledge in Ireland. So like myself, I've been in France now for over 10 years, working in the big groups. My first hire, Leisha O'Connell, also from UCD, by the way, also did SEMS. And same as myself, lives in France. And, you know, she's formerly at LVMH and Chanel Group as well. So I don't think that's going to be our issue. Our issue is going to be finding the best brands and matching them with the best talent to help them grow internationally. And the interest coming from brands in Ireland has been phenomenal. So hopefully we can get as many of them as on board, because the bigger the group, the stronger the group. And in general, the better that our Irish brands are doing, whether they're with us or not, the better it is for the economy, because it means, in general, products that are at least designed, if not manufactured in Ireland. And it puts Ireland on a more, you know, general stage of being a country that can produce great people and great things.
And in terms of you mentioned the Team Ireland approach, and this is for listeners who've heard this phrase but may not understand what it is, but it's about sort of a number of different agencies and some companies coming together in a coordinated way and, I suppose, promoting the economic interests of Ireland together. I mean, is there like an Enterprise Ireland aspect to this story? Obviously, IDA promote companies going in the other direction, but Enterprise Ireland story, for who would be normally working with these companies and have probably worked with them over the years, do you see yourselves as complementary to that, or is that just the state doing its own thing separately? Or how does that whole thing, do you think, might evolve over the next few years?
So in terms of our infrastructural projects, one of the things that we would like to see happening over the next 3 to 5 years is that we would actually work with the IDA to bring international manufacturers into Ireland. So today we have a massive lack of manufacturing of premium or luxury goods. We're really good when it comes to pharmaceuticals. We've got great data centers. So we've got infrastructure there, but not for manufacturing. So when it comes to fashion, leather goods, accessories, even for those premium foods, we don't have the facilities for brands to be able to tap into. So a lot of Irish brands have to produce internationally, whether that's in the Far East or in other parts of Europe. So what we would like to do is actually bring some of those manufacturers that have the knowledge, bring them over to Ireland. So that's with IDA. Give these manufacturers an opportunity to do joint business plans on the ground with us in Ireland. Then Irish brands can produce with the manufacturers rather than having to go overseas. And it also gives international brands the opportunity to have made in Ireland products. So that's one of our more medium to long term goals. And that would require, of course, huge infrastructural change. But again, it's bringing jobs back into Ireland. It's not a reliance on foreign direct investment. It's actually quite the opposite. And it'll bring manufacturing from other countries into Ireland, because made in Ireland is really positively perceived, and being able to have something made in Europe in general, whether it's for suitcases or pottery, any premium good, if people are willing to pay a higher price point, then they also want to see it being made in a country that they see as being a country that produces quality goods. So that would be one of the projects where we definitely would be engaging with the likes of IDA and whatnot. And then when it comes to Enterprise Ireland, of course, we're in contact with them all the time. And it would be great to find a way to work together, whether it's with the individual brands in the portfolio or from a portfolio perspective when we're working through the acquisitions and expansion of the group.
Yeah, I suppose they've been trying to promote these companies for a long time. And I'm sure they'd have some war stories, you know, what's worked and not worked from their point of view. But obviously, they're a state agency, so they're probably slightly different, their experience. But that definitely must be some kind of way to collaborate there. It's all very fascinating. It's obviously very ambitious. You made me laugh when you said a lot of our people keep telling you it's very ambitious, you know, which is...
And then Americans tell me the opposite. They're like, 50 million seems pretty slim.
They say, do more, aim higher, etc., right? So it sounds like from your own personal experience living overseas, particularly in the French market, has maybe, I don't know, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's given you a different perspective. You've kind of moved out of a less self-critical of the Irish industry, and you're a little bit more open and a bit more of a, and I mean this in a positive way, a cheerleader for the industry. Whereas if you're enmeshed really close to the business here, you might be maybe too close. Is that fair to say, or have I got that totally wrong?
No, that's absolutely it. You've hit the nail on the head. Also, I was born in New York. My parents lived and worked for years in the US. So I also come from a really entrepreneurial family. And I think having those first couple of years of my life in New York, that gives you a little bit of an insight into what's possible, like that, you know, the scale that you can grow things to. And then being in France the last 13 years, seeing the reality of how you build those brands from the ground up, because these are the brands that you see on Fifth Avenue. They're the brands that you see on Bond Street and that you see, of course, on the Champs-Élysées. There's an art to it, but there's a science to it as well. At the end of the day, like I said, the likes of LVMH, they are the biggest companies in the world in terms of market capitalization, and they are some of the biggest employers in the world as well. It's really different to the tech industry, and it's really different to pharmaceuticals. Very different as well to aircraft leasing or aviation in general. So those three things that are you know, we're very good at in Ireland. But I think right now, culturally, the country is in a fantastic place as well for us to lean into made in Ireland, which is something that we haven't really capitalized on before, other than for certain alcohol brands.
Yes, I'm great the way you've done this entire interview without mentioning those particular names, which we both know. So,
well, none of them are owned by Irish companies anymore.
Yeah, well, that's true, actually. Yeah,
so. Yeah, we want to see an opportunity there for brands, you know, if they do eventually want to sell, because like in tech, you would, you know, an exit is always the goal in general when it comes to technology or even, you know, other types of startups. But when it comes to family owned, you know, brands that produce goods, there's often no exit opportunity. And if there is, it's going international and the company is no longer Irish owned. So we want to change that as well and have a home for Irish brands in Ireland.
Well, even if the venture you're involved with, even if it was not a success, let's just say it was not a commercial success, it will be a success even if it's just concentrating focus on the area, which nobody has really done in a kind of a coherent way before, and sort of showcased these companies and showcased what they're doing. So if, from that point of view, if that was all that was achieved, that would be valuable, you know, because as you've said, a lot of them are working away a lot of times in the shadows. They've got tiny little niches, or they don't have the skills, or they don't have the capital to go to the next level. So I'm sure a lot of them would be screaming out just to try something new, if nothing else.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's been a great privilege as well to launch Ireland Fashion Week. We'll have 90 brands involved in that this year. And I tell brands, because we've so many brands come to us in the last month in particular since announcing Vico, saying, you know what, Vico's not for us because I don't want to give up any equity in my brand, but I'd love to get involved in Ireland Fashion Week and at least get to learn. Like last year, we gave over 7 million euro worth of technology for free to the designers involved in Ireland Fashion Week. I just have a big interest in seeing Irish brands succeed and seeing Irish creatives turn their, you know, designs into a brand and into a business, because it's good for the country in general. And we've had such a brain drain over the last 15 years, my parents' generation as well. I think it's been a constant, right, of Irish people having to leave to be able to make a career, especially if they're involved in areas that would be seen as niche back home, like for me in luxury and fashion and beauty. But I think we can now start building at home as well and make sure we've got opportunities for people there so that we don't just have a constant, mass exodus of talented and well-educated people coming out of UCD and the likes.
Yeah, no, listen, that's always a good thing to aim for. Just before you go, though, I think it's important to just, do you want to give any details or contact point for people who are in this area to contact the company? Or is that something a kind of a more of a need to know basis?
Absolutely. No, I love hearing from people. Like, it's been really interesting. So we announced a month ago almost what we were doing with Vico, with the Irish Times. I did a really thorough interview with Kieran Hancock, and it was great because once we put ourselves out there and we're not positioning ourselves as a fashion platform or something, it's a serious business and we're involved in serious acquisitions and we want to be on, you know, the global stage competing with the likes of LVMH Group. So we had great outreach from a lot of Irish high net worths that maybe are living abroad at the moment or have moved away a long time ago. We've had a lot of the family offices come to us. We've had a lot of private wealth managements. And sometimes it's just people that are interested. So we're building out that cap table. It's going to be a very interesting process because we can use leverage buyouts. We can use debt. But if there's someone who really wants to get involved and it's a win-win situation in terms of their network and having a stake in the group, we love to hear from those people. And then likewise, if people have a brand that they think is a good fit for the group. So just drop me an email. It's ashley@vico-group.com. Or you can find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, anywhere really on social media at Vico Group, VYKO Group.
Great. And you can find us or find you at the end of this podcast. So thanks very much for coming on and making the case and making the sort of prompting the interest. It'll be interesting to see how things go a year or two from now when we can possibly hopefully catch up again. Ashley McDonald, thank you for joining us on Business Impact.
Thanks for having me.
Now, if you enjoyed this week's episode of the UCD Business Impact Podcast, please subscribe to episodes on Apple Podcast or Spotify. We cover a broad range of topics with insights from business leaders around the world, so there's sure to be something there for everyone. I'd like to thank our production team of Beth Gormley and Mike Liffey. They work tirelessly in the background, sourcing interviewees, editing, promoting episodes, and everything in between. I've been your host, Emmett Oliver, and we hope you can join us next time on UCD Business Impact.